Hi, this is Eric Greb, Senior Associate Editor of Neurology Reviews. I'm speaking with Dr. Daniel Cantor, Medical Director of the Neurologique Foundation in Ponte Vedra, Florida, and President of the Florida Society of Neurology. At the 2013 International Stroke Conference, Dr. Cantor presented a study describing the prevalence of pseudobulbar affect in patients with stroke, and the extent to which the condition affected patients' quality of life. Dr. Cantor, why do more than a third of patients with stroke appear to have pseudobulbar affect?
Thank you very much for having me. The first question is, what is pseudobulbar affect, or PBA? We think pseudobulbar affect is when the body gets discoordinated, not in terms of movement, but in terms of how it displays emotions. What I mean by that is sometimes you're feeling sad on the inside. So your mood is that you're feeling sad or that you're feeling depressed, but you may not display that to the outside. The way we display our moods to the outside is called affect. In pseudobulbar affect, what happens is the brain gets discoordinated, and instead of your mood, the way you're feeling on the inside, and the way you're displaying it on the outside, your affect, being conjugate, meaning going together, sometimes it can be disconjugate. And you may cry even though you're not feeling sad. Or you may be sad, but you start to cry disproportionately more than you would. We also have pseudobulbar affect, or PBA, that goes the other way, where people will cry or laugh unexpectedly. And it may be out of proportion to what they're feeling, or it may not be what they're feeling at all. In strokes, what happens is there's damage, sometimes temporary and sometimes permanent, to different parts of the brain. Some of those parts of the brain we think are important in the way that we coordinate our mood, the way we're feeling, and our affect, the way we're displaying it. And that's why we think that in over a third of people with stroke, we can see PBA.
Okay, now compared with patients with stroke, why are patients with stroke and pseudobulbar affect more likely to report that their neurologic condition affects their quality of life?
In the PRISM trial, one of the things we did was we were trying to get the point prevalence of PBA in six neurologic conditions. Stroke was just one of them. The other ones we looked at were ALS, so amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or Lou Gehrig's disease, MS, or multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, dementia, as well as traumatic brain injury. And we wanted to know, how common is it that people have, well, this condition called pseudobulbar affect, or PBA? And besides trying to figure out how frequently people had it or what the prevalence is, we also asked our subjects a question. We asked them, how has your neurological condition affected your quality of life? And then we gave them an 11-point scale from 0 to not at all to 10 being strongly affected. What we found is that people with stroke and pseudobulbar affect, as well as with the other neurological conditions and pseudobulbar affect, stated that their neurological condition affected their quality of life more than people who had those same conditions like stroke, but without pseudobulbar affect. What we think this means is that when you have pseudobulbar affect, it also impacts your quality of life independent of the stroke itself. And it's almost like having a more severe stroke with more severe symptoms. And so what you're going to report is that your stroke is really affecting your quality of life more than somebody who had a stroke who didn't have pseudobulbar affect.
Now, patients with stroke and pseudobulbar affect are more likely to take antidepressants than patients with stroke alone. Is pseudobulbar affect associated with depression?
In this study, what we looked at is we looked at how often are people taking other medications, like antipsychotics, like antidepressants, either tricyclic antidepressants or non-tricyclic antidepressants. And what we tried to see is, do people with pseudobulbar affect have more of a burden of medications, meaning are they taking more of other types of medication? We didn't answer the question in the study about whether pseudobulbar affect leads to depression or whether depression leads to pseudobulbar affect. We do know from other information, from other studies, that people with pseudobulbar affect may be more likely to be depressed. And in fact, I've looked at this separately in patients with multiple sclerosis. And it actually looked in our preliminary study, like people who have the inappropriate laughing, that's actually more associated with depression. And it's very difficult to say that depression makes you laugh at inappropriate times. It's much easier to say that perhaps what we're looking at is that when you have PBA, so when you don't display your emotions exactly the way you mean, that may make you feel more socially isolated, and that may make you feel more depressed as well. But we do not think that pseudobulbar affect and depression are the same thing. We think depression is how you're feeling on the inside, and pseudobulbar affect is when you're having a discoordination of how you display those emotions on the outside.
But are antidepressants an effective treatment for pseudobulbar affect?
Currently, there's only one FDA-approved medication for pseudobulbar affect. That medication is a mixture of dextromethorphan at 20 milligrams as well as clonidine at 10 milligrams, and it's taken twice a day. That medication has been shown in multiple studies to reduce pseudobulbar affect, to reduce PBA, and because of that, the FDA said that it's approved to reduce PBA regardless of the underlying neurological condition. In the past, people have used on an off-label fashion certain antidepressants, including some of the tricyclics antidepressants, because there was nothing else to treat the PBA with. And sometimes people think it does seem to help with the pseudobulbar affect as well. We think the results of our study, though, show that if it was really true that antidepressants were such good treatments for pseudobulbar affect, then those people wouldn't still have had pseudobulbar affect who were on the antidepressants. Yet we found that people had both stroke as well as PBA, and then they also were taking antidepressants. So these people clearly were being undertreated for their pseudobulbar affect symptoms.
What did you learn about the prevalence of pseudobulbar affect among patients with Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, or multiple sclerosis?
So we looked at people with PBA in other five conditions besides stroke. And actually what we found is that it's high in all of those conditions. For example, in multiple sclerosis, we found that 45.8% of people had pseudobulbar affect. So almost 50% of people with MS do have some symptoms of pseudobulbar affect. We looked at ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. It was 44.8%. We looked at traumatic brain injury. It was even higher. It was 52.4%, meaning more than half of people with traumatic brain injury have some symptoms of pseudobulbar affect. We look at Parkinson's disease as well as Alzheimer's disease. We see those numbers are in the 20s. So for Parkinson's disease, it's about 26%, and for Alzheimer's dementia, it's 29.3%. No matter what, though, what we've learned is that PBA is much more common than previously thought, and that means that it's under-recognized by both the physician as well as the patient and also the patient's family. And what that means is we want to raise awareness so that patients and their care partners and sometimes caregivers can bring this to the forefront and talk to their neurologists about it.
Okay, so what can be done to improve the recognition and diagnosis of pseudobulbar affect in patients with stroke and other at-risk populations?
So for all these populations, what's important to know is that PBA is a real symptom, and it's a real symptom that can be seen in multiple different neurological conditions. And what's important for patients and their families to recognize is that although this may seem embarrassing and it may not be something people want to discuss in polite company and all those sorts of things, it is definitely something that should be brought up at their doctor's office visits. So we think that you have to take really a two-pronged approach where the patients will bring this up to their neurologist, but also that neurologists will proactively ask their patients about it. There is a validated questionnaire called CNSLS, or Center for Neurologic Studies Lability Scale, and it's a simple 7-question survey that helps to tell the neurologist, well, are we talking about symptoms that seem to be consistent with pseudobulbar affect or PBA. And this can start the discussion that then happens in the neurologist's office.
Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Kenter.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Eric Greb, Senior Associate Editor of Neurology Reviews. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.